Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Caught short there with the ad break. But anyway, here we are. And we are discussing, or we're asking you, are you interested in knowing more about artificial intelligence, how it can be used in an ethical and responsible way, and how best to regulate it whilst also enabling innovation? Navigating the Future of Regulation at ATU Donegal tomorrow will feature a keynote speech by Nell Watson, an international trailblazer in emerging technologies, including AI and its ethical and safe use. Eleanor, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Yeah, it's great to, it's great to have you on. It'll be great to have you speaking at this event. AI, it's almost like a genie that's out of the bottle now, is it? Can it be controlled? Can its usage be controlled? Because even, you know, major governments seem to be caught out by how quickly it's developing and somewhat behind the curve. You might not agree with that analysis of it, but that indicates to me that this is almost racing ahead of us to some extent.
Yes, in many ways, AI can be likened to magic, right? It's the closest thing to magic in the world today in many ways. And we should be careful with such power. We shouldn't use it like muggles. We should use it cleverly and carefully. And certainly the genie is out of the bottle, because we have rapidly accelerating and increasing returns on investment and development. And so there's a very rapid takeoff in capabilities. And that means that these developments are going to come thicker and faster, especially because they're kind of self-reinforcing. You know, the more that we develop machine learning capabilities, the more that we understand the human brain, the more that we can replicate those capabilities within AI. And essentially, there's no sign of any slowdown or stoppage or winter ahead of us. It's only going to get faster for the foreseeable.
And, you know, when we talk about, you know, the ethics of it all and protecting human rights, infusing ethics, safety, and the values that elevate the human spirit, the concern is who is the arbiter of that? Who decides that? You know what I mean? Because there can be biases even now in some of the responses that you get, even just at the most basic level of our interaction with AI. So you almost feel that whoever controls AI controls its values that elevate the human spirit.
Well, I think all of us have had some experience, for example, with a social media algorithm that decides we've done something wrong when it was completely innocuous, or even simply just a bug within the system. And that illustrates how systems with power over us can potentially disenfranchise us from various services. And of course, if those are used in things like justice or healthcare, et cetera, the stakes are much more higher than simply being locked out of your social media for a week or so. It's very important that we come together to develop and implement international standards for improved transparency, mitigation of these disproportional biases, to improve the accountability of systems so we know what went wrong and why and how to prevent that in future, to reinforce privacy. And there's some fantastic new encryption methods we can use that enable us to do machine learning even on encrypted data, which is very promising. And of course, ultimately, to help to ensure that there is fairness built into these systems. Now, of course, to some degree, this is going to be an individual preference. It's also going to be a cultural preference, and there's going to be legal and jurisdictional reasons as elements as well to this. So it's important that we have basic ground rules as internationally as possible, and then enable both national governments and individual people, crucially, to choose their own preferences for working with AI. What I would like to see is a world where AI can learn and adopt our values and be able to fit with our own preferences, that it molds itself to our needs and our desires.
Yeah, which is complex, because someone engaging with AI in Afghanistan might have very different expectations for responses as someone living in Britain or Ireland, for an example.
Absolutely.
So how do you manage that? I think most people listening to this program now are watching the show. AI is in their lives already, whether they realize it or not, be it on social media or what have you. It is going to increase rapidly. And, you know, we've seen some of the stuff in terms of, you know, what Google are working on and other companies in terms of, you know, engaging with your local hairdresser where, you know, it speaks to you, it understands you, it can schedule you and all that type of stuff. So it's going to really become an integral part of everybody's life, whether they like it or not, I believe. Where do you grade this as much as we can in terms of, you know, shifts in humanity, if that makes sense? I'm not trying to overstate it, but do you know what I mean? In terms of big things that have happened along our timeline, where do you place this?
It's a Promethean development in many ways. You know, it is likened to the printing press, perhaps even the wheel or fire. It's an invention that gives us potentially future inventions, right? And that makes it also potentially our final invention, because it may invent something beyond human. And that might involve uplifting our humanity, helping us to be better human beings, helping us to understand each other in new ways, to self-actualize better, right? Because our civilization is quite good at solving for food and housing and security, increasingly for more people around the world in better ways. But we don't have good answers for love and belonging, for helping people to reach the maximum heights that they can. And potentially that's something that AI could help us with. However, the inverse is that AI could ultimately end up manipulating us in various ways that we don't find preferable. It could seduce us in various ways. Our relationships with AI could become more compelling than our human relationships, which could be ultimately not to our benefit. And ultimately, AI is emerging as a tool of war, a method of fifth generation hybrid warfare, which is all about plausible deniability and attacks which gradually and slowly inexorably demoralize people, mm-hmm. so that the target society collapses in on its own weight, but not a single shot has been fired.
And the speed with which it's developing is, like, I would suggest, I'm not overstating it, maybe it's even now, but you talk about even in a war environment or controlling the narrative or whatever it might be, like, it's probably available now, but widely available, it might be very difficult in a year, 2 years, as soon as that, to be impossible, really, almost, to determine what is presented as reality and what is not, even in terms of sort of video generation. That's how significant this is and how imminent it is.
Absolutely. I mean, we're already seeing today that anyone with a small subscription fee can now gain access to tools to edit reality, in a sense that only intelligence services or possibly Hollywood with major multi-million dollar budgets had access to. Now, any one of us can alter a scene, replace a character, magically erase somebody out of existence, or completely change how a scenario happened. And that's going to have major impacts, not only on things like propaganda, but also potentially within judiciary and evidence and having to struggle to verify whether a piece of evidence is indeed genuine or not.
And sorry for it to be so linear, the question, but if you had two emotions, like excitement and fear, where is the scale there for you? Where is the weight?
Personally, I'm exhilarated, which is a mixture of excitement and fear. It's when you're on the roller coaster.
Stop the word gymnastics.
And you're sort of enjoying it, but you also want to barf at the same time. That's kind of where I am personally.
Okay. Right.
But I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
I'm cautiously optimistic because we have the beginnings of good standards and certifications to help to support and provide a foundation for mm-hmm. the development of more ethical and responsible and robust AI. And really, I liken it to air travel in the 1950s, where, you know, it was exciting but very scary at the same time.
But at least humans humans were flying the planes. But I take mostly, yes.
But we had to create good rules around that.
Of course.
We had to have lots of accidents, but we learned from them. We learned from them quite quickly, and then air travel changed dramatically in its safety.
You just wonder where we're at now in terms of AI's influence on the world order, and you know how much of an influence is it having now? Obviously, with human guidance versus you know where we might actually go. I think that's really untold at this point. Deirdre Hart is project manager at Donegal County Council, and anyone who might not have been interested in knowing more about artificial intelligence, Deirdre, after listening to Eleanor there, may have their interest. Peaked, because this is sci-fi, but we're living in it right now, if you know what I mean. It's like, if anyone watched the most recent Mission Impossible film, it's the most plausible of all, as implausible as it might seem, in a way. Deirdre, you're looking forward to a big attendance at the event tomorrow.
Yeah, it's great. We have about 100 people registered in person, and we've got about another 70 online, because for us, this conference is part of something bigger. It's looking at the future of regulation and how we in the Northwest could be in an absolutely brilliant position in terms of capitalising on that. Regulation affects all of us, and there's some of these key issues. They cross international boundaries, and in the Northwest, where we've been working as cross-border collaborations for a long time now. So we feel like here we are in terms of the two local authorities working on a cross-border basis and the academic institutions. And we're the interface now in terms of the EU and the UK. We also have a huge amount of North American interest, because what happens in regulation is that often where EU goes, North America follows. So we think we're poised now in terms of setting up a super cluster that focuses on regulation to capitalise, and nowhere else in the world has done that. There's clusters that might look at technology in financial services or technology in medical devices, but there's nowhere in the world at the minute that looks at this cross-sectoral, across all sectors, and you can't look at the future of regulation without looking at AI, because both it's how you regulate AI, as Nell's talked about, in a responsible and safe way, but also you can use AI in a way that will help us comply with regulation. There's a huge cost to industry at the minute in their compliance, and a lot of it is still paper-based, so there's huge potential to use AI in a really good way to reduce the costs and really make lives easier for people. But it's that very careful balance in terms of how you regulate AI in a way that keeps that level of innovation, so that can actually help us as well in quite a tricky area. And here we're trying to I suppose, build ourselves up as somewhere in the world that people then could look to as a centre of global excellence. And that's why in pulling this conference together, it was great to get Nell involved, because we knew we really wanted AI to be a part of that, to look at how we do that in the future.
So, I mean, obviously, it is the opening gambit there is, are you interested in knowing more about AI? But who... I mean, maybe you can even look at those that have already said they are going. Who's interested in this, really? Like, who is making up your delegates there, and who do you hope to see there? As I say, it is, you know, open to most, but is it people that you feel could help shape what we're talking about here?
No, absolutely. It's probably a really good mix of, like, the public agencies who might, and the regulators, people who are looking at regulation in the future. It's also businesses and industry who are regulated and know that they have to comply with regulation. And then it's academic institutions, the ATU, Ulster University and so on, who are looking at, you know, ensuring their students of the future have the right skill set and talent in these fields in terms of regulation and artificial. So it's a really nice mix across, if you imagine, those kind of three sectors, public, private and academic.
Yeah, and all of those are, including Nell there, all of those are sort of reflected in the speakers list as well.
That's right, yes. We've tried to capture all those different sectors, and we've tried to look at cross-sectoral issues, including AI, but also ESG, climate sustainability. The regulations around that are only going to get more complicated. So we want to have a focus on that in terms of gearing up, getting businesses to think about the regulations that are coming down the line quite soon, and making sure that they're gearing themselves up in that. And we think if we set ourselves up as a centre of excellence here, then we'll have all that expertise and knowledge on this doorstep. So it'll really help the industry in the Northwest if that's, you know, on their doorstep, and also in terms of opportunities for getting further investment into the Northwest and jobs, because, as you know, the two councils come at this very much in terms of the economic development perspectives. For us, it's all about inward investment and creating jobs for our young people of today, and making sure that they're leading the way in terms of that knowledge and specialist skills.
Yeah, for sure. And with that in mind, you know, we do need our, although it might, they're very young, but our 13, 14, 15-year-olds and so on, looking to see where the world's going to be in 4, 5, 6 years. It always reminds me of the time of the economic crash. No one signed up to be architects, and no one signed up in certain areas of work. And then, like we do, we rebounded, and where was all the architects? Do you know what I mean? So we have to, and parents guide their young people to sort of maybe where the world's going rather than sometimes where it's at right now. Now, so where do you see us in 5 years? You know, not from an educational perspective, but from an AI perspective.
In 5 years' time, AI will be deeply embedded within our personal and professional lives. We will have kind of AI concierge that is helping us with all kinds of different tasks, you know, helping us to prepare documents, helping us to find a nice place to eat, etc. It's kind of the dream of what Siri was supposed to be 10 years ago, but turned out to be...
Don't mention Siri. That's why I stopped using iPhones, because they wouldn't put Siri on the iPhone 3, but they put it on the iPhone 4. Who's laughing
Indeed.
Now? Yeah.
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that point where we're having a kind of relational experience as well with machines that are able to follow up with us and ask, you know, how was your day at the park? Or, you know, you said you had a bit of a bad back last week. How are you doing now? And that's going to have an impact on many people's lives.
Maybe it'll be positive, even in the area of mental health, you know.
Absolutely.
And the stuff like that. It's all, like, there's so many things that are really exciting, but as you say, also things we have to be nervous and cautious of as well. Thanks so much, Nell. We look forward to hearing you tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Deirdre, how do people get involved if they want to attend? Where is it? When is it? And how do you get to it?
So it's at ATU Letterkenny campus tomorrow, and if anyone, registrations close at 4 o'clock today. So if this really has got your interest in getting involved, probably the best thing to do is go on to donegal.ie, and there you can find a few recent news articles and the link to register. So if people can do that before 4 o'clock today, and also if you can't join physically, there's an option to kind of, it's going to be live streamed, so you can also register, just tick online and then you'll get a link to join us tomorrow morning.
All right. Enjoy it. Probably in 5 years' time, it'll be two computers talking to each other. I mean, you'll be retired. All right.
Thanks, Greg.
I hope not to. All right, Deirdre, thank you very much indeed for your time. Deirdre Hart there, 086 60 25,000. I just want to let you know that the Redress Focus Group meeting is tonight at 7 p.m. in Ongrianon Theatre, if you can get along to that. It's really important, not just for those that are involved in the redress groups, but for everyone as a whole. Fantastic work and information at those meetings. So in Ongrianon Theatre, sorry, I beg your pardon, I'll just double check that. It's in Ongrianon Hotel tonight at 7 p.m. That's the Redress Focus Groups meeting. So as I say, get along to that if you can. And there's a couple of things I wanted to say. There was a couple of birthday requests too. Frances Porter in Ardraven and Buncrana. Happy birthday, Frances, from your brother, John, and sister-in-law, Anna. Please play Destination Donegal. I'm sure someone later on will. Amy McIntyre in Beechwood Grove in Lifford. I'm talking to you, Amy. Happy 21st birthday. That comes in from your granny, granddad, and all the family. I also want to mention that Mallon RNLI Fundraising Branch are saying to you that it's time to start getting those costumes ready. Halloween Fancy Dress Disco in McGrory's Hotel Coldaff Backroom on Saturday, the 28th of October, 9 p.m. DJ Scotty in the house. Come along for a fun night. So that's a Fancy Dress Disco on the 28th of October at 9 p.m. Admission at the door, just €10, and you're supporting the Malin RNLI. So it's this weekend that there's Halloween stuff on, is it? I've lost complete track of time altogether. Right, so what are you? I'm not going to anything, I don't think. So I'm not going to get a chance to dress up. Oh well. Now, the Israeli embassy has admitted a tweet by one of its senior diplomats was wrong after she claimed Ireland was funding tunnels under Gaza that are used by Hamas. She said the deputy head mission of the Israeli embassy in Ireland made the claim on X, which is formerly Twitter. Ms. Maoz wrote, "Ireland wondering who funded those tunnels of terror? A short investigation. Direction 1, find a mirror. 2, direct it to yourself. 3, voila." All right, okay. We're joined on the programme now by Liam. Liam, what's your reaction to that kind of language, albeit deleted? It's still there, it's still out there, and it's not sort of the only reprimand Ireland has had from his people who represent Israel.
And Craig, to be honest with you, I was quite annoyed. This is the kind of rhetoric that's going around the whole time by Israel and Israeli representatives. That diplomat had no right whatsoever to use that kind of language. But then we have our own ambassador here in Ireland, and she wasn't very, very helpful what she said about President Higgins said. From what I recollect, President Higgins basically said it's a war crime. Well, Greg, can I give you a little comparison and maybe you can help me out here? I'm not really familiar with what's going on. I'm ignorant of the thing in the sense. 47... the British was given back what was called the Otto Land. They were given it back to the Palestinians. But at the same time, they went along and brought in the Jews. And by bringing in the Jews, war erupted between 1947 and 48, which 750 Palestinians were thrown out, burnt out, kicked out, and shot out of their homes. And they had to find refuge somewhere else. And this is one of the starts of it in 1947 and 48, mm-hmm. and has continued ever since. Mm-hmm. We had a leader there, I think his name was Yasser Arafat, and he, even though he was a member of the PLO, he was trying in the latter end. I think they brought up an agreement in 1943 called the Oslo Accord. I'm almost sure that's what it was called. And basically that was what he said was that Israel should live in peace, but equally the people of Palestine should live in peace. Mm-hmm. The problem with Israel and all its leaders, they just want to own the whole world.
That's it, but it is maybe complex. Not. Well, I'm sure they... I mean, are you saying Jewish people want to own the whole world? That's relatively what you
well,
said.
Okay. You
know, I mean, that's...
They want to take over that whole area there. In that part of the world.
Also, there are those in that part of the world as well that want the complete annihilation of all Jewish people. So, people sort of say, no, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault. The bottom line is my concern is particularly what men do, mostly men shoot at each other and blow each other up or whatever. I'm not sure we can ever stop that. But whether it's Israeli children and civilians, or those in Gaza, or Palestine more generally, that's just unbelievable. The wrongs and the rights, people go back and forward and back to the 40s, and I get that, and sometimes you have to go back in history to find out where we are and where we're going. But there's no...
But now, to be fair to you, Gren, I agree with you. I probably should have said it first. I'm totally opposed to what Hamas did that time. Mm. Apparently there was 1,400 people murdered that week, where the Hamas came in and just shot and kidnapped relentlessly. Now, some reports says 1,200 of them were Israeli soldiers. I don't actually know. But you're right in what you're saying. It's all wrong. But how to start it, I'm not sure. But, I mean, the Americans pumping in money left, right and centre definitely is not going to start anything, because if you have money and power and guns coming in like that, you're going to do like Putin above in Russia. He wants to take over. He wants to annihilate all the Ukrainian people, and he wants that part of the world so that he can grow food and control the world. So as an ex-president of America one time says, if we can control the clouds, we can control the weather, we can control the world. And then he changed it. He said, if we can control the food, we can control. And that's basically what Putin is doing.
The one thing and I think this talks more to your point as well, is that it seems that even qualified criticism of Israel you get into bother for it. So even if you even if you say, right, Israel are entitled to defend themselves, but they can't go in blanket bombing civilians because that's a war crime. Even if you said that, and I think to most right-thinking people, not just in Ireland but across the world, that would be an acceptable statement. It seems, and that's really as much as I heard from the president, really, if the truth be told. You can get into serious bother for that.
So can I give you an analogy? We'll just say we're back in 1980 in Ireland, or 85 or 86, and a certain terrorist group, which was then called, I'm not sure if they were a terrorist group, they were called the IRA. And they went along and planted off a few bombs and killed some people. Did that give the British the right to come in and murder, bomb-less and butcher and slaughter the people in Northern Ireland? Did it? It didn't. That's basically what's happening.
Well, that's what's happening. That's what's happening in Gaza, Liam.
So Israel is
bombing the civilian population
and killing innocent people
with a view to altering the stance of the leadership of that country. That's what terrorist groups, in inverted commas, do. I presume the IRA tried to do. They bombed Britain and elsewhere with a view to changing the policy of that government. That is, some might say, and this is not anti-Israel as such, that's what Israel are doing. They are bombing the general population, because we know that because thousands upon thousands of them are dead, with a view to changing and eliminating the leadership of that country. So some might equate it that way. That's all I'm saying. You brought in the sort of that analogy. Some might feel, well, that's exactly what's happening right now.
So it is, and you will agree that America is supporting, and not alone America. Our own Taoiseach was very vocal the very first days after Hamas went in and did what they did, which was totally wrong. But our Taoiseach was very supportive. In fairness, I think
in the immediate aftermath of what happened with that Hamas attack, and this, and there was an awful lot that went on before that. We both know that, Liam, as well, on both sides. But it was horrendous what those individuals do. And I'll be honest, if the world was not shocked to its core at those type of actions, I'd even almost be more worried. So I wouldn't blame the Taoiseach for an immediate response. I think the Taoiseach, the president and others within Ireland have said, look, stop it. We need to stop this now. We can't be doing this to civilians. The Taoiseach
is
amongst
them as well. But Greg, we're never going to stop if we have Americans pumping millions, billions in armoury into it. We're never going to stop.
But I get you, and I understand that, Liam, but who's funding Hamas? It's Iran. Who's supporting Hamas? It's Russia. So this is what makes me laugh when some people of a certain political persuasion on social media seem they back Israel and they back Russia at the same time, which is crazy because they are enemies of each other effectively. But if Russia and Iran are backing Hamas, which they are, okay, is it not then understandable, as apparent as it is that these US bombs are killing civilians in Gaza, is it not understandable, though, in a geopolitical sense, that Western allies are going to roll in behind Israel? Because it's effectively Israel, the West, versus Hamas, Iran, Russia.
Well, Greg, I'm of the older members of the world, and I think the very opposite. I think if Israel actually pulled back, and I mean that, they have a lot to suffer from the fact that people are killed and innocent people and people are kidnapped. I think if they pull back, because if they go forward with this ground force, they're going to murder and butcher everybody and level it in front of them. But you're dead right. Then Iran is going to come in. That's going to be worse. That's going to be way worse. Iran is only looking for an excuse to go in. And they actually have announced that if there's a ground force going in, as we speak at the moment, they're having meetings on this.
And the Iranians are having meetings in north, on the northern border. And we've got Israel bombing in Syria at the moment. It really is a powder keg. I do think the likes of Biden are starting to get a wee bit worried about it because their language is changing. And I think they are trying to They're trying to prevent Israel from doing exactly what you've talked about for the exact reasons that you talked about. I don't think the West can afford to fight two wars on two fronts, i.e. in Ukraine and i.e. in the Middle East. But again, you know, it's the incredible loss of life. You know, it's like the amount of young Russian men, the young Ukrainian men and women, the young Israelis, the young everyone in Gaza. I mean, it's just the world's going to pot.
Yeah, it's gone totally bad. If and I agree again now, I'm of the older persuasion, if there was such a thing as a God, now is the time to start coming down, because the world needs him or needs somebody. Because it's gone absolutely stormy. And someone said to me, what's it all over? Is it about power? Is it about religion? Is it about greed? I'm not sure, Greg.
Well, power, money, you know, I mean, there's a lot of money in war. And it's made off the back of soldiers, really, who are sent into these scenarios, probably not really knowing what they're fighting for.
To die.
It's horrendous what's going on. And listen, I'm listening to a senior police officer with the Israeli police force, and he said that to those that are protesting Israel's actions in Gaza, he'd round them up and put them on buses and drive the buses into the centre of Gaza. Which effectively meant that if they oppose them within Israel, they'd just be part of the collateral damage in Gaza. That kind of language from senior police, I don't see any space for it. I don't know enough about it to have an opinion than me and you are, Liam. But this is horrendous, the type of language that's being used by all sides.
I'll tell you a good one before I let you go, Greg, because I don't want to be holding up your time. We would over to visit our son in South Korea. And being the type of person I am, I would go up to a policeman and ask him certain questions, the speed of the traffic down along and things like that. And I happened to coincidentally say to him, what do you think of the American president, which at the time was Mr. Trump? And he said, once he's there, we're safe. And I go, sorry, I don't understand. He says, North Korea is mad, the leader, Jim Trump, whatever his name is, but he knows that President Trump is more mad. And once he knows that, we're safe. Isn't that unreal?
Well,
that was a police.
I actually can understand it, because at that time Trump was meeting with Kim Jong-un, and that's what he wants. He wants to be sort of... Yeah. Anyway, we're a million miles away from that now, because that's another area of the world. And then you also take in the China-Taiwan situation and... we need a reset, Liam. Listen, thanks very much for your call. Lovely to chat.
Thanks a million, Greg.
All right, take care, Liam.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Thank you so much for all of your calls and contributions on the programme today. We'll get to some of those before the show ends. But we want to welcome onto the programme now Conor Gallagher, crime and security correspondent with the Irish Times. And we're going to speak about Yosef Paleni, who murdered two men in Sligo last year and targeted his victims due to hostility and prejudice towards gay men. Well, he's been sentenced to life in imprisonment. Conor, I mean, all of cases of these natures are very difficult, but this was a particularly gruesome and brutal case.
Absolutely. I mean, just all murders, as you said, are horrific, Greg, but this one just had that added level of brutality and inhumanity. Not least the incredibly violent nature of the attacks carried out by Paleni on his three victims, two of which he killed and mutilated their bodies. I won't go into the exact detail, but it was just incredibly distressing for the friends of Aidan Moffat, the first fatal victim who discovered his body in the home, and then the nieces of Michael Snee, who's the second fatal victim, not to mention the ongoing trauma being suffered by Anthony Burke, who was Paleni's first victim, who he stabbed in the eye, and miraculously Burke managed to call 999 and he managed to pull through, and very resilient, impressive person. And then there's this other kind of sensitivity around it, that these were Paleni targeted these men because they were gay. He used gay dating apps to meet them and to kind of convince them that he was, you know, a normal guy. And in the case of Anthony Burke, at least, the circumstances of the murder meant he had to come out as gay. Everyone knew he was gay, and he was quite happy with you know, people not knowing that. So another awful side effect is, you know, added to the trauma is it kind of forced him against his will to come out as gay. And now he told me that he feels forever associated with these murders. You know, the people of Sligo have been very, very supportive to him. But people will still stop and stare and look at him, and he knows what they're thinking.
Palani said that he would have continued if he wasn't stopped.
That's right, yeah. So Palani was arrested following this very dramatic Garda manhunt. You know, you had a convoy of 8 or 9 vehicles, a heavily armed Gardaí, travelling around, visiting the homes of gay men in the Sligo area with the assistance of Mr. Burke in an effort to find his next victim, or at least warn people to be very, very careful about who they talk to online. So Palani, he was finally arrested. Gardaí got a photo of him and was shown it around Sligo town. And someone recognised him and was able to give his full address. Gardaí planned a massive arrest operation, cleared out all the neighbouring houses, and shined a spotlight into the house. Then ordered Palani to come out, hands up, and he did. He came out peacefully. Initially, in an interview, he made no admissions. Said he had nothing to do with it. Wasn't there. But then by the third interview, I think the enormity of the evidence, it was insurmountable, he realised. And he made admissions, and he made very full and graphic admissions. He said that being gay is a sin under Islam, but he also said he didn't hate the men because they were gay. So quite contradictory in places. And he also said the voices made him do it. He was hearing voices. He said he was had mental health issues, and it was the voices really that made him do it. This was an early attempt at, you know, preparing an insanity plea. But the Gardaí, and indeed psychiatric evidence and assessments, found he wasn't insane. He might be a very disturbed individual, but he didn't meet the legal definition of insanity.
And what about this money found in his property? An enormous amount of money. The Gardaí don't believe that this was, you know, part of him being radicalised or the funding of his actions. But it still remains a mystery, does it?
Somewhat of a mystery. Yeah, this is €350,000 in cash, large denomination notes, which were found in 2 suicases in the home. And obviously, Gardaí's mind went to maybe there was an outside organisation, extremist organisation involved in funding Palani to carry out these acts. It was they liaised with their international partners and intelligence agencies to see if Palani was on any of their radars. He wasn't. The Criminal Assets Bureau had a look at us. They couldn't find any evidence of illegitimate sources. The working theory is that this is just the savings of the family over the years. It's a family of 8 siblings and 2 parents. They came from Iraq about 17 years ago when Yusuf Palani was 6 years old and settled here under a refugee resettlement program. It's understood they had a relatively high standard of living in Iraq and brought some of that cash with them, but only some. The rest was saved up over the years. The family are very frugal and don't trust banks. But I think the exact source of the money might remain a mystery. But Gardaí seems very, very confident it's not linked to terrorism or organised crime or anything like that.
OK, Conor, listen, thank you so much for your time this morning. I greatly appreciate it. Conor Gallagher, who is crime and security correspondent with the Irish Times, giving us details of that trial yesterday, at which Yusuf Palani was sentenced to life imprisonment, having taken the lives in the most horrific circumstances of Aidan Moffat and Michael Snee. And he was also sentenced as having pled guilty to the serious harm to Anthony Burke. Right, OK. Back to other matters. Ironically, Padraig McLaughlin is the spokesperson for fisheries in the marine, a man who spoke against the reintroduction of the Voisinage, which was massively negative implications for small inland fishermen, and then voted for the reintroduction in the Dáil. So I wouldn't pin my hopes on him to get a result on the hospital. It would appear from your initial interactions with him that the figures he worked on over the weekend on funding missed the point. It was only on you pointing out that the hospital needs to be upgraded. Only when you pointed this out did he adjust the position. So for a man supposedly working on this issue for years, he appears to have a poor understanding of the issues. I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think most people across all political parties speaking on the hospitals speaking on the hospital's issues are well versed. But listen, that's your opinion. A caller says Sligo Hospital has a 359-bed capacity. The population of Sligo, 69,819. Letterkenny University Hospital, 302 beds. Letterkenny population, 167,000. Why is that? Letterkenny has a smaller hospital with such a big difference in population, not to mention refugees that have come into the county since. Is that actual Sligo's population? Because, of course, Sligo University Hospital services at North Mayo, I think North Roscommon, Leitrim as well. But anyway, be that as it may, your point, for the most part, still stands there. Greg, we in Ireland do not know enough about the situation in Israel, Palestine, Gaza, the history, culture, etc. It's complicated. All I can see is the Old Testament being revived and the same wars and massacres and destruction being perpetrated. There's not a lot we can do, only to try to suggest humanitarian and peace plans. It would fit President Higgins to look at the 1,000 killed in Ireland since 2019, which was facilitated by the stroke of a pen. They're referencing abortion there. He could do something to stop or lower the number of these deaths. Is that a false equivalence, though? We're talking about the people of Gaza and Israel, of course, being murdered in their thousands. And comparing that to abortion in this country, which many see as a healthcare, as many don't, and which the majority of people in this country voted in favour of. Why are we not commenting on the fact that Israel is the aggressor backed by the US and have been oppressed in Gaza since 2006-07? Long before that, some would say. That's precisely was the nature of the conversation. Greg, I'm sorry to disagree with Liam on the 1948 date as the start of the Israeli-Palestinian War. It started over 4,000 years ago, and I've stuffed together to that effect, but I agree with most of his other statements. Thank you for that. Just to remind you once again, the Redress Focus Groups, they're holding their update and support meeting tonight at 7 p.m. It's in Ungrianon Hotel in Burt. Everyone is welcome, so get along if you don't mind, and support the work of the Redress Focus Groups. It's a relatively small amount of people doing an awful lot of work that is making a difference in certain areas, one step at a time. So you can get along to Ungrianon Hotel Burt to get an update and support, and just to chat, really, I suppose, as well, tonight at 7 p.m. There are six narrow bridges on the road from Letterkenny to Glenties. These bridges recently had work done on them, but instead of building them wider and making the road safer, they built them exactly as they were. How does this make any sense? I don't know. Halloween next Tuesday. Greg, time I hate. I'm so scared of bangers. Yeah, I think most people don't, unless you're the person using them, and I haven't really, so I don't know. Bangers and fireworks are unpleasant. Greg, I'm not being facetious, but I was just wondering, how many cow farts would it take to equal the air pollution from the bombs, etc., exploding in both the Russian-Ukrainian and the Israeli-Palestinian-Hamas war? It is affecting climate change. I don't hear any government politicians, climate protesters, or even our president talking about this air pollution, or did I miss it? There are some speaking about it, of course. But not in the way not world leaders like you're talking of. Billions involved in profits for the munitions and ammunition industry. Is that why no one is complaining? I'm heartbroken at the thousands of precious lives lost in these wars. There are many, many different contradictions in this world. Oshin says, no sides, but take a look at the history. We, the West, created Israel initially to solve a problem, but eventually to control a region. Hence, Israel created terrorist groups. The brigade which carried out the attacks was the most extreme, with the result Hamas shall have to negotiate with them for hostages. The whole Arab world is not eating popcorn. They are getting angry now. Greg, would it not be better to have those traffic lights at the Polestar roundabout working part-time, like the ones in Derry at Strand Road roundabout? They seem to be a good job there. I presume the council aren't ruling anything in or out. They're reviewing what's going on. It's a complex junction on a relatively small roundabout. They've just been switched on, in fairness. They're out there with their laptops assessing traffic, moving sensors around. Too slow for some people, but look, personally, me, I'll wait a month and see what the story is then. But some might say, well, that's easy for you, Greg. You're not running a business that's losing out. So I understand all the variations. Okie doke, that's Tuesday's show in the bag. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 for another episode of the 9 till Noon show. From me, Greg Hughes, and Carol O'Noor, who researched and produced. Have a great day.